Moses just parted the Red Sea. Egypt is falling apart. And somewhere within all this chaos, a violent young man named Gethelas is about to accidentally become the founder of an entire cultural identity. This is the quest for power.
Welcome to the Quest for Power, where we are rating and reviewing the mythical, legendary, and historical characters of the Celtic, Nordic, and sometimes Germanic regions of Europe. As always, I am your unreliable narrator, Michael, and my favorite Chaos Goblin who is joining me on this adventure is...
I don't see him.
Oh shit, where'd he go? Where's that little green guy?
Hi, I'm Roberto, though, so no Chaos Goblin here today.
So anyway, last episode was like a slow burn followed by an epic downfall. What do you remember?
Fish people?
Yeah, there were fish people.
What else do I remember? I remember there was fighting.
There was fighting.
I mean, I can say that about any of these episodes.
Yeah.
There was a king, and then he died.
That is true.
Was this the one who did the thing with the lips?
No, that was Partholon. This king was so forgettable. You probably don't remember him. At least the way that I told the story. I found some other sources that make him a little more interesting, but we're going with it.
I think if I recall correctly, he just kind of ruled, and then he died, and then the fish people, the Fomorans, enslaved everybody, and then there was a rebellion, and then they all died.
Yes, correct.
That's pretty much all I remember.
Yeah, so unfortunately, that doesn't really matter this episode, but there you go.
We rated Nemed pretty badly, so that's probably why I don't remember.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. Essentially,
he only got 12 points, so.
Yeah, essentially, Nemed, he's the third invasion of Ireland. He comes in, he does fine. He actually defeats the Fomorians, I think, three times, I believe. But then the problem is he dies. And then apparently his sons are inept at ruling, or they don't succeed him for some reason. It must be just an expedition, and the Fomorians enslave them, the man two-thirds of everything, and yes, they have a rebellion, and then some rogue druid casts tsunami and all but 30 get killed.
Or at least 30 survived.
Yeah, so there we go. Those first three episodes, Cesaire, Partholon, Nemed, are like one-shot D&D campaigns or movies. This episode is when the new style of Quest for Power really begins. Our sources are going to start blending together. It's going to be kind of like a Game of Thrones or epic fantasy where we're seeing many different viewpoints across an entire season, and eventually they're going to connect together. And I'm going to try and keep it as simple as possible while still making it a really fun tale, like those favorite novels, if you are a fan of, like me, of those epic fantasies.
I'm not, but...
Really? What?
I hate fantasy, you know?
Yeah, that's why you have read all of George R. R. Martin's stuff, and you have a Wheel of Time map I see in the background. I'm sorry, if you hate fantasy, you're not going to like this podcast, because we take history and make it epic fantasy. What is that?
Lord of the Rings set here.
Oh, that's sick. Is that new, or...?
No, I've had that. You saw it.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. You don't show it all that often. You don't flash me as much as you used to.
For the sake of the listeners, I don't actually flash Michael.
I can't believe I said that. That's amazing. Anyway, today's episode is an example of why I'm excited about this podcast. Like the martial career of Congal, we have an epic story that is usually completely glossed over. The medieval sources that I have used managed to combine Greek mythology, Irish mythology, Scottish mythology, and Abrahamic religions into one cinematic universe.
What?
Dead serious.
No.
So, it may not seem like we're staying the course of the Irish mythological cycle, because we're using the Scottish version of events written in the Scotticron. And because the Scatacron's like an actual story versus the Irish myth is like, oh yeah, this guy descended from this Bible named figure. Scatacron fleshes it out a little bit more. It's still written in medieval, so that's all I my think it's up to the 18th century is my current criteria. Since we're all about the Celtic Nordic regions of Europe, Roberto, don't you think it only makes sense to begin our story in ancient Greece and Egypt?
No, we're talking about Ireland, aren't we?
I mean, yeah, you'd think so. We actually find ourselves specifically in the Greek court of King Naelus or King Aeolus. Go with whatever one suits you. So this king apparently had a mentally unstable son by the name of Gethelus or Goidel Glass. I cannot say that correctly. I'm sure someone is, I have not heard an Irish person pronounce it yet, so I don't know. I'm going with Gethelus, which is like the more Latinized version. So we're going to go with that one. And it appears he had an ancestral, this like being mentally unstable was an ancestral trait inherited from his ancestor, Nimrod.
I know that name.
Yeah, as in the Nimrod from Abrahamic religions who dared to rebel against God and is responsible for the Tower of Babel.
What? No, you're a Nimrod. What are you talking about?
I know. So that's why Gethelus is kind of an asshole, is because he's a descendant of Nimrod.
He's a descendant of a Nimrod.
Yeah, that is very true. So fun fact, the Scottish Chronicle claims that Nimrod is Saturn, or as the Greeks call him, Kronos. It further claims that he was the first powerful on the earth and a mighty hunter before the Lord and is a killer and oppressor with love of domination and also compelled men to worship fire like fucking heathens.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
This king, he knew his son quite well. He refused to give him any kind of power in the kingdom, which obviously went really well.
Don't give your asshole son power. They're going to love that.
Extremely, probably you can guess, he revolted against his father and decided to wage a war of terror with his own loyal army across the region because he has daddy issues.
I mean, I have daddy issues and I haven't done that yet.
Yeah, maybe you need to go find yourself a bunch of loyal people to go terrorize a region. I don't know what to tell you.
Hey, Mike, want to go terrorize some Vikings fans?
Yes. Yes, I am all for that.
All right, let's go. I'll be in Wisconsin next week. I'll get myself a cheese hat.
There you go. I'm all for this. But despite his son terrorizing the kingdom and essentially committing treason, it wouldn't look great for this king in these times to execute his own son. So he decided to do something differently. This king, Naelus, was seeking an alliance with Pharaoh Chentres? Chentres. I don't think he's a real pharaoh, but go with it.
I mean, you would know if he actually did the Pharaoh series, Michael.
I mean, I would know if I did the Pharaoh series, but they don't have fun tales. I'm sorry.
Guys, vote for the Pharaohs. Vote for the Pharaohs.
Yeah, someone's got to join. Yeah, get to there. Go to the quest for power if that's what you want. I'll do it if that's what the people demand, but otherwise I refuse. I
Come
like
on,
stories.
Nick, vote for pharaohs.
This pharaoh had his hands full dealing with the Ethiopians who apparently were laying waste to the land of the Nile. Ooh. And so Gethelus's violent tendencies were put to good use. He was married to the pharaoh's daughter, Skoda, as in the eponymous name of Scotland.
Oh, Scotland! I know something cool about Scotland. I love Iron
Skata.
Brew.
Have you heard of Skata before this?
No, I've heard of Scotland.
Oh, there you go. Anyway.
But you know what Scotland has it? I love Iron Brew.
What is Iron Brew?
The thing you drink after you get hungover.
I want to try this.
It's great.
This sounds great.
It's a soda. It tastes great.
Damn, it sounds badass, too. I love it. Iron Brew.
Well, yeah. It's the right fresh content. Eh? You got me some Iron Brew.
Is that Scott? Ish or Irish?
I don't know.
Okay.
Scott's
offending
Irish.
Everyone here.
It's Scott's That's Irish. Fine. There we go.
That's fine. We cross every religion, so we might as well offend everyone. Anyway, yeah. He has Gethelus married to the Pharaoh's daughter Skoda, and it cements an alliance between Greece and Egypt. And then Gethalus was sent with his own army to go teach those Ethiopians a lesson. And wouldn't you know it, he's really good at violence, and he beat up the Ethiopians. And after that, he decided to help his new father-in-law in doing, as the Skata Kron puts it, keep the children of Israel in perpetual servitude. Because just need to insert that right in there.
So enslave the Jews is what he's saying.
Pretty much. And the reason this is relevant is around this time, the children of Israel are being led by some guy named Moses. And apparently they're trying to escape Egypt.
Well, you know what? I have a feeling they're going to get lost in this desert for 40 years.
Yeah. Don't you think so? Yeah, it might happen. So this Pharaoh, he decides to chase Moses all the way to the Red Sea. And just when he thinks he's able to capture the escape runaways, the sea fucking opens up. And the Pharaoh chases in after him, rushes after the slaves, but then suddenly the sea closes back on in him, and he and his entire army inhale water in their lungs until they die a pretty horrific death.
Okay, one question. Who is the Pharaoh again?
Chentres? I don't think it is it is only in Scotland that this is a thing.
Because the Pharaoh during Moses' time was Ramses II.
You are correct.
The Great.
Correct.
Okay.
100% correct.
So it's the chroniclers who are lying to us.
Yeah, the unreliable narrators.
How dare you?
I know. It's almost like there's a reason I started inserting that into the podcast.
Sorry, I just had to say, because I'm like, I'm pretty sure, if I recall correctly, that it was a Ramses, like, and I double-checked that.
I'm glad that you're the person to do that, because I am not. I'm going with where the story's going to take us.
It's Ramses, y'all. It's Ramses. Yes,
it is Ramses II, who is, he'd be a fun ruler to eventually raid, but we got to get to him if we ever decide to. Anyway.
Vote for pharaohs! We can skip a bunch, because we don't know any about a bunch of them anyways.
Oh, you strongly underestimate my power.
Michael, all we have are names.
You strongly underestimate my power.
All we have are names.
Gethalus thought at first that it would be a good idea to seize his father-in-law's throne, but he hesitated.
Why did he hesitate, Michael?
Egypt has been infected with all that shit that God and Moses has been thrown at them. Do you remember off the top of your head what was thrown at them?
Locusts. What else is there? Blood. The Nile turned to blood.
Oh, that's right. Yep.
There are frogs, gnats, flies, disease, spoils, hail, locusts, darkness, and then the death of all firstborn sons.
Yeah, so imagine that is what's going on in your world. Fucking insane, right? That, and on top of them, their oracles were like, just so you know, there's more impending disasters that are coming here, so you might want to leave.
Get the fuck out of Dodge!
And that's exactly what they did. The now royal couple, Gethalus and Skata, gathered a large amount of followers, which were compromised of both his original followers from Greece and new followers from Egypt, and they got the hell out of there. And
getting the hell out of Dodge.
This is why I love this chronicle. They weren't the only ones to get the hell out of there. Apparently, some guy named Dionysus or Bacchus left to go found the city of Argos and gave Greece the use of the vine. And some guy
false.
Named Cecrops, Cecrops, crossed over into Greece and founded the city of Athens.
False.
I love how in the 1500s, or whenever this was written, I think it's around the 1500s, that we were already creating cinematic universes well before Star Wars or Marvel.
I'm sorry, but wine was made in Georgia.
I knew that would trigger you so hard.
Okay, but wine is from Georgia.
I like how they just put that in there. It's just a little throwaway line, and I couldn't resist not including it, because why not? So what do you do now? You can't go back to Greece because you're pretty much kicked out. I mean, father told him not to come back. And running away from Egypt isn't a thing.
You took over the throne.
Yeah, but he's running away from Egypt. He decided to get the hell out of there.
You go to Italy.
That is one thing. First, though, he needs to be elected king by his noble followers.
Okay, they're following him already, so like.
Yeah, but he needs to have that official title, Roberto. Otherwise, no one's gonna follow him, even though they already are following him.
If you elect me king, I will be the best ruler of them all. I will make our people great again.
Can you put that in and decree that they would either seize a kingdom or territory from other peoples by force if necessary, or if the gods favored them, at least take a possession of some uninhabited land?
We're gonna have Greenland. Greenland's gonna be ours. It'll be a great state.
Fantastic. That's essentially his election speech. And he and his nobles swore on an accord that w they would carry this decree to the best of their ability.
And then they all died, and we go to the fifth invasion of Ireland.
We haven't even invaded Ireland. We're not even there yet.
Oh, are we even here? Are we even, yeah, what is the fourth invasion? I'll find out.
It seems they didn't really want war, though.
War, what is it good for?
Even though he's apparently a violent motherfucker, he didn't really want more. And he decided to go try and find some inhabited land in the remotest regions of the world. And
Okay.
so they gathered a large fleet of ships, laden them down with supplies that would be needed for a voyage, and headed out west, trusting in the guidance of their unnamed gods.
They do have a god, though.
Not these people.
It's yes, I know what your god is called, Michael.
What?
Makamangruad.
No, we actually will get to who his god is. But they didn't name the god at this point.
Is it Jesus Christ?
No, it is not.
Okay.
In a super not related way at all, they ended up wandering for 40 years. Exactly, somehow, in parallel with Moses and his followers.
That's a long time.
It is extremely a long
This
time.
is such a shitty king.
Yeah, not very good. Here's the thing. They pretty much hugged the northern coast of Africa and settled, tried to settle like many times, and it just didn't work. It's almost like a ridiculously longer of Nymeria's 10,000 ships.
Yeah, but the northern coast isn't that long. They take
No,
40
no.
years.
Yeah, no, it's not. But they kept trying to settle. So who knows? They may have settled somewhere for 5 years, went to the next place another 5 years, and they're done, you know? It'd have been
Fine,
something like
fine.
that.
We don't know.
It really is interesting, though, on how the tone of the chronicle shifts from him being an unhinged Joffrey-like prince to an actually respected leader.
I am the king! If you have to tell people you're the king, you are not the king.
Yeah. He had to be elected king. And according to an unnamed chronicle, within the chronicle, it says, quote, "In this way, they wandered for a long time over unknown seas in various directions, passing through many places, enduring many perils and various vicissitudes, courting as they were driven about by the violence of opposing winds, until forced at last by lack of food, they landed safely on the shores of Spain beyond all their expectation. There they threw out the anchors, which held the ships at rest with their tenuous, t tenacious grip."
They only got to Spain from Egypt. That's not far.
I mean, it took the Israelites, what, 40 years to go from Egypt to
Israel?
Israel?
Yeah, but
They're going a little further.
Moses is also a very bad navigator,
Yeah,
so.
he's not. I'd have to agree with that one. So as soon as they landed in Spain after this horrific, you know, this long journey, they finally get some decent land. They were immediately ambushed as they hit the beach, Normandy style. A fierce battle broke out, and eventually the natives threw down their weapons and they ran.
The natives.
The natives.
Well, I guess they won.
Cathalus and his men pursued them and plundered a considerable part of the territory.
Well, that's good then.
Yeah, so he got some more supplies, I guess. Afterward, they returned to shore where their children and wives were, and they began setting up camp on the small mound. And throughout the night, after a long day of battle and pillaging, the men constructed a wall to resist future enemy attacks because they're not stupid.
We're gonna build a wall And we're going to make the Iberians pay for it.
That's pretty good. And eventually, this makeshift stronghold became a town known as Brigantia, named after the Celtic goddess Brigantia.
Wow.
Also might be known as Brigantium to people who like Rome.
Or in modern day, what is it called, Michael?
Yeah, you're about to find out. La Coruña in Galicia, Spain, which is the northwestern tip of Spain. So they actually got pretty good north after running away from Egypt.
That's like above Portugal.
Yeah, I told my wife that I want to go there now after reading this. In fact, while I was researching, I'm like, all right, I found the new city that I want to go to next time we're going.
Well, it looks like a Tower of Hercules there, right?
Yes, you are correct. Speaking of which...
Wait, is Hercules going to show up now?
Gathalus put down his roots, and he had a tower constructed. And eventually, in Roman times, this tower became the Tower of Hercules. Which, according to UNESCO, is the only fully preserved Roman lighthouse in the world that is still used for maritime signaling.
What the fuck? That is so cool.
Isn't that? So despite his initial victory, he and his people were constantly being assailed by the native forces that were really determined to remove him from this land.
Mm-hmm.
Gathalus was able to start inflicting massive casualties against the attackers, but at the cost of a significant amount of his own people. Every day, more families are burying their loved ones. Constant funerals are happening. Morale is getting pretty rough, as you can imagine, when you live in a perpetual state of war for survival.
Yeah, makes sense.
Despite his rather brash youth and how he was considered an asshole, Gathalus actually became a ruler that cared very deeply for his people. He believed that if the level of slaughter would continue at the rate it was, they would be completely wiped out or put into servitude. And on top of that, he was starting to grow a conscience of giving up on the initial goal of acquiring unoccupied lands and harming no one. Apparently that was their primary goal. And he was starting to think that he offended the gods. And this was the gods' punishment for attacking the land that the gods had assigned to other nations. I think this kind of moralizing is the author and why some people hate the Scroticon, because he loves to moralize, but it's in the story.
I love moralizing too, but you don't see me being hated.
He gathered his nobles together and they set a plan in motion. He summoned his sailors and gave them small, fast ships loaded down with arms and provisions. He ordered them to sail the ocean blue and go find unoccupied land. After some time had passed, he saw those very ships with his standards come sailing back into port. They had great news. With the favor of the gods, they found an island rising up in the distance, surrounded on all sides by the salt sea. And after exploring the island, they sailed back as quickly as possible to their king. Oh, I may have forgotten to mention, they accidentally somehow killed the entire local population by beating them to death with their oars.
So that was the fourth invasion of Ireland.
On the bright side, the land is empty now. Honestly, I don't know if this island is Ireland. I haven't read in the future. And I know the beginning of Scotland has a little different take on things. So I don't know if it is Ireland. We will find out as we continue on, though.
Okay.
And then as the chronicle says, Gathalus was overtaken by sudden death. And
okay.
Before we start, before he perished, he accosted his sons for their laziness and cowardness. If they gave up such a noble kingdom, which they could enter without fighting or any danger, and completely glossing over the fact that his men just committed mass genocide to make this happen. And with that is the life and reign of Gathalus, son of Naelus, first king of the Gaels. You ready to rate him?
Royal power.
All right, so pre-reign. Even though his father didn't give him any official power, he still commanded a large enough force to become a real thorn in the side of his father. All during his pre-reign, he amassed quite a bit of followers, including members of the nobility. Then, as he became king, he managed as a leader of refugees to invade the Spanish coast, defeat an ambush, and set up... I'm pretty confident this is the oldest city in Spain. I would not be shocked if it isn't. The thing is he was never able to like pacify the region around him. He was constantly dealing with attacks from the native Iberians, but at the same time, so probably Celts, and at the same time, he was able to withstand years under constant warfare. And judging by the fact that they were wandered for 40 years, he had to be pretty old at this point to be dealing with that. Kind of all over the board. What are you thinking?
Thinking of four.
Interesting.
Because, like, for me, it's like, it's just not, sure, like, he led an army, and then, but then he was, like, traveling for 40 years. He doesn't really build something up, and then when he finally starts, he ends up dying?
Yeah, it reads almost quite like the invasions before. Like, he doesn't quite have a stronghold yet.
Yeah, so it's just boring. So, four.
I'll do a three.
Okay. That's a seven in royal power. Infamy.
So, he was kind of an asshole in his youth. Oppressing the Hebrews isn't a good look. I can't really knock him much on the whole invasion thing. It's kind of what they did in those days. But genocide, on the other hand, it's kind of an issue. Even if he didn't order it, it's blood on his hands by an order that he did. So he's at least, by insurance anyway, he's at least half responsible. What are you thinking?
A six.
A six?
Yeah, because he's attacking the Jews.
Oh, that is true.
Yeah.
I'm going to do five.
All right, that's an 11 in infamy, which is our... I was going to say, like, oh, this is our highest score, but Partholong got a 20 in that.
So yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so that's an 11 infamy. Oath of devotion.
We got something here. He has elements in his life where it's pretty clear he cares about what the gods think of him. And on top of that, he named his first ever city and home that he created after the Celtic goddess Brigantia. She's a real Celtic goddess, and we will see another part or aspect of her down the road.
Thinking of three.
I'm thinking of two. One for each point.
Yeah. All right, that's a five for Oath of Devotion. Bardic Inspiration.
Okay, so he actually, it's not the most interesting story, but it is the first time I think we have a full story arc. He's a kind of an asshole prince who terrorizes his father's lands because he didn't give him any power and he has daddy issues. Yet despite not having official power granted to him, he was charismatic enough to attract followers, many of whom were of the nobility. He married into Egyptian royalty and was in Egypt during one of the most famous events in human history, saw an impending doom, got the hell out of there, traveled in parallel with the Israelites for 40 years along the northern coast of Africa, eventually landed into Spain. He was at least in his 70s when he hit Spain. Despite that, he survives an ambush, makeshifts a fortress, turns that fortress into a city, all the while constantly dealing with death and destruction. He died just after perceiving about a promised land for his people, which is kind of almost a cliche for some, you know, it's a
tragic ending.
Yeah, like a tragic ending or like a new hope on the horizons type deal at the end. Like a Rogue One death kind of. So, you know, this guy is just known as the Epinus, however you say that, named ancestor of the Gaels. The chronicle here actually created an epic with the mass somehow.
Okay. With this, for bardic inspiration only, a two.
Really?
I was not attracted to it. It's just a boring story.
I actually really enjoyed the story.
I mean, like, he starts off as a prince who gets into trouble, then does jack shit for 40 years, and then dies.
I guess I really enjoy all the surrounding stuff with it that carries me with the inspiration.
Yeah, we're not ranking that, we're ranking him.
I feel as we're ranking his story, not so much him.
Yeah, I think it's a boring-ass story, so it's a two for me.
Interesting. Five.
Okay, that's seven for Bardic Inspiration. Legacy.
Alright, so big one. He and his wife are considered the founders of the Gaelic people as a whole. The Gaels, known in Gaelic as Goidel and in Latin as Scotty, are named after Goidel / Gethelus and his wife Scotta. He is credited with founding the city of Brigantia, which actually was a Celtic stronghold, and we know that because it was a Celtic stronghold that Caesar himself stormed. It was a center of trade in the region way before the Romans even got there. And he is credited with building a tower that Romans would later build off of to create the Tower of Hercules, which is the only Roman era maritime tower that still operates today.
You're going to hate me for this score, Michael.
Yeah, I am.
It's a 10.
Okay, no, I don't hate you. 10, yeah, obviously.
He's the name for gender.
Well, not just that, like, all the other stuff is in, like...
I was gonna give him the 10 for just being, yeah, having the language named after him.
So 10 with kickers. Bonuses.
Yeah. Alrighty. That's a 20 for legacy. With a 7 in royal power, an 11 in infamy, a 5 in oath of devotion, a 7 in bardic inspiration, and a 20 in legacy, that gives him exactly 50 points.
That sounds about right. It kind of matches him.
Puts him 6 overall within all the rankings we've done.
That's crazy. What about Ireland rankings? The mythological cycle. Season 6.
That puts him 5th overall.
Between Caesar, Nemed, and Partholon.
That puts him 2nd overall.
Interesting. So, with that. In the current annals of history, Gathalus is known as a mere footnote. Someone that's just a legendary ancestor of the Gaelic people, but not much more. I have a feeling I know how you're going to go with this based on your reaction to his life. But is he good enough to be placed in the Hall of Legends? Just good enough to be an NPC? Or does he deserve to be burned at the stake, ashes in the wind?
Burn him at the stake.
Are you serious?
No, less NPC.
NPC? I don't know. Yeah, I'll agree with you.
Cool. Yeah, he's just boring.
I really enjoyed researching it. It was a lot of fun.
Okay, just to let you know, everyone this season has gotten lesser noble so far.
Yeah, that does not surprise me.
Okay.
We'll get to some higher kings soon.
The last one we had was Congo Claringneck.
Yeah, I don't know why Ireland takes so long to get going in their mythology, but here we are. So, that brings us to the end of our story. What did you think? Did you like it a little bit more than Roberto?
Or, no.
Or did you find it a little more interesting than me? Do you like the fact that even the medieval authors were combining many mythologies into one, which is what we're trying to do on this podcast? Anyway, you can reach us on Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, or email us at questforpowerpod@gmail.com. If you enjoy our style of storytelling, we have some premium episodes for your pleasure if you become a member of our nobility by signing up at thequestforpower.com. Also, I might include scripts, like previous scripts down the road, so you can just read things if you want. And I have some plans to return to our roots and get back to the storylines of the Franks, specifically in the era of Fredegund versus Brunhilde on our premium feed. So if you love House of Dragon, I think that's where George got his inspiration from. It's way too closely linked. Anyway, that brings us up to next episode. If we don't stumble into another side quest while reading sources, we will get back to the descendants of Nebin and see what they've been up to while Gathalus is going on his adventures. And with that, the king is dead.
Long live the king.